This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, May 30th, 2013. I'm Kyle Callums.
I'm Christina Thomas. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The 2013 KUAF Fulbright Chamber Music Festival continues with a divertimento for string trio by Mozart and a string quartet by WC tonight at 7:30 at the Stella Boyle Smith Fine Arts Concert Hall in Fayetteville. Performers include the U of A Music Department faculty and guest artists. Admission is free, with a reception to follow this evening's performance. More information is available at fulbrightsummermusic.uark.edu.
On this edition of Ozarks, a botanical sanctuary in Carroll County is one of just a few in the country and the only one like it in Arkansas. Jacqueline Froelich will take us there. Plus, the changing face of community theater in the region. One long-standing company has dissolved. Others are considering their future.
Plus, a bit of Yiddish. Remembering Bonnie and Clyde in Fort Smith and more.
First, the Desso Falcon Jet facility in Little Rock will see a $60 million expansion over the next 3 years, according to company officials. It's a move estimated to bring 500 new jobs to the state with a median entry-level salary of about $48,000 a year. President and CEO John Rosavallo notes Arkansas's capital city is home to the largest Desso Jet facility in the world.
Every day, at every moment, one of the 2,000 Falcon flying in the world represents also all of us here from Little Rock. And when the time came to write a new chapter in the history of Desso Falcon Jet, I think it was only normal that we decided to expand our presence here.
The facility will be used primarily to build what the company calls the Super Midsize Aircraft, also known as the SMS aircraft. That's Desso's newest jet, expected to be unveiled this fall. Site preparation will begin next year, construction continuing through 2016.
Earlier this week, we brought you a story about efforts to save the historic dam at Black Bass Lake in Eureka Springs. But Bentonville officials are still working on a dam project of their own. David Wright, the city's Parks and Recreation Director, says that the floods that have washed out roads and trails in Benton County also flooded the dam at Bella Vista Lake. While the question of funding for the project has been tossed back and forth repeatedly between the local and federal levels, Wright says that federal emergency management agency funding has been secured.
Thanks to our local senators and representatives in Washington, they have helped us get that project back in line. So we are currently under contract with an architect who is conducting an environmental assessment to move forward with that project. The EA will take about another 12 months to perform. But if the EA comes back like we think it will, then we will be able to proceed with the design of a new dam.
Wright says while he doesn't expect anything out of the ordinary from the environmental assessment, as the new dam will be built in the same place as the old one, the assessment is a requirement for FEMA funding. As for how much the project will cost,
there's not a dollar figure that's been allocated at this point. We have been given some estimates that this project could be as much as $3 million, but we haven't been able to nail down on what that is yet. The first step is the environmental assessment. They'll do that part first, and then we move forward from there.
The structure was originally damaged by a flood 5 years ago and was also inundated during significant flooding in 2011.
Plans for Springdale 7th Fire Station are moving forward after the City Council approved purchasing land for the building this week. Fire Chief Mike Irwin says while land deal has been approved, the physical appearance of the station is still up in the air.
We're still in the design phase to understand how much we can actually afford. At a minimum, you'll see a two-bay, six-bedroom station, so it would accommodate up to six firefighters out there, which would eventually probably move into actually an engine company out there and an ambulance company out there.
Irwin says the new station will cover much of the western part of the city.
Well, it's going to cover all of the Harbor Meadows area down south of 540 until the 540 interchange gets completed, and then Station 6 will cover some of that, and then it will also cover all the northwestern area of our city as well. So overall, it's going to cover a pretty wide range, but it's not densely populated out there other than the Harbor Meadows area. So call volume-wise, when you look at the call volume, that's going to split it up pretty good.
With construction of the new station and relocation of two others, all paid for through a bond issue approved by city voters last fall, Irwin says total response times in the city should end up in the six-minute range.
The Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics released new unemployment numbers yesterday. The unemployment rate in Northwest Arkansas was 5.1% for the month of April, a 4/10 of a percent decrease from March, and down 2/10 from April 2012. The labor force grew to 239,600 people for April, an increase of about 5,000 people from March, as well as from April 2012. The unemployment rate also dropped in the Fort Smith metro area. April's unemployment rate came in at 7.2%, a decrease of 0.7% from March, but up 0.1% from April 2012. Between March and April, the area's labor force grew by about 200 people, but it shrank by about 800 people from April 2012 numbers.
Some severe weather may be visiting the state by the weekend and could be here as early as today. Northwest Arkansas will bear the brunt of the storm system. Emil Nipper with the National Weather Service says the storm system could produce severe storms. The National Weather Service will be monitoring the storm system as it moves across the Rocky Mountains and Plains states.
Forecast calls for mostly cloudy skies tonight with a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms in northwest Arkansas, a 30% chance of showers in the Arkansas River Valley, overnight lows in the upper 60s. Tomorrow, Friday, partly sunny with a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms before 1 p.m. and a high of 82 in northwest Arkansas. Partly sunny with a high of 86 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow evening, an 80% chance of showers and thunderstorms with lows around 69.
This is Ozarks at Large. A Carroll County homestead is one of 98 botanical sanctuaries in the entire U.S. and the only one in Arkansas. It's operated by Bree Donna Thompson. She's working to conserve at-risk medicinal plants. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Folick takes us to meet her.
Well, welcome to Happy Homestead Bluebird Botanical Plant Sanctuary. It's pouring down rain here. Everything is lush and green. Everything has tripled in size. I was gone for a week and came back, and everything grew, including the weeds.
And weeds are welcome in this plant sanctuary. I'm Bree Donna and Scott Thompson's 19-acre homestead located in southern Carroll County. A torrential downpour prevents us from wandering their lush gardens this soggy Ozarks morning. We take haven in the couple's comfortable passive solar stucco cottage at the kitchen table over steaming cups of lemon balm mint tea.
It's a wonderful nerving antidepressant.
A perfect tea for a stormy day. Bree Thompson first came to the Ozarks 30 years ago from Baltimore, Maryland, to visit a friend and decided to settle here. She met and married her husband, Scott, a local singer and musician. They operate HealthWorks Massage Center in Eureka Springs, now in its 21st year, but spend all their spare time at home.
One of our dreams was to live lightly on the land. And it's just was one of those common things that we both had. And so we started looking around for land, and we looked at a lot of different pieces. And for some reason, we came here, and we were just looking around, and all of a sudden we heard a hawk cry, and we looked above us, and there were these two hawks circling over our heads. And we just both looked at each other and went, wow, that's interesting. And then we put a shovel in the ground, because we're both gardeners, and there was actually dirt.
Turns out they were re-inhabiting an ancient homestead.
It used to be a livery stable in the front meadow, and so we've dug up old horseshoes and forks and spoons and pieces of pottery and nails and all kinds of goodies.
So they've set down roots, lots of roots, perennial flowers, herbs, and vegetables pollinated by their honeybee, Scott's the beekeeper. They live sustainably, collect rainwater, and use compost toilets. Even their modest solar system feeds excess electricity back into the grid. The couple garden their intensive no-till raised beds together, but using different techniques.
I was the gardener in the family for about 20 years, and I do a lot of mulching. I plant things a lot closer, and I mulch because I'm busy, and that way I don't need to do a lot of weeding. Scott, on the other hand, loves to hoe, and he believes and works with the dirt mulch. Is it called?
Dust mulch.
Dust mulch way of gardening, where you get in there and you hoe. You plant things further apart, and you hoe, and that it's good for like drought farming because the roots get very large in the bottom, so it doesn't supposedly take as much water. And we've done this separately for like 2 years in the garden and found that they both work.
Bree first learned about plants from her mom.
You know, there were five kids in my family and not a lot of money, but we always had a big garden. And I was the kid who always helped her in the garden. And I was always the tomboy who was climbing trees and getting hurt and getting stung. And my mom showed me about plantain. Okay, grab these leaves. This is plantain. Chew it up. Make a poultice. Slap it on there, and it'll help bee stings.
After moving to the Ozarks, she began to study medicinal plant books and picked up techniques from various locals.
Most of the things I use and make my salves or my tinctures are things that are not just on my piece of land. They're in the Ozarks. The Ozark is just a wealth of medicinal plants.
Bree is a student of Rosemary Gladstar, a pioneer in the modern herbal movement. She operates Sage Mountain Herbal Retreat Center, a 500-acre botanical preserve in central Vermont. A popular author, her best-known book is Planting the Future, Saving Our Medicinal Herbs. She writes that 12% of plants worldwide and nearly 30% of plants in the United States are on the verge of extinction due to human incursion. And medicinal plants are most at risk, especially wild herbs, which are being over-harvested to meet consumer demand. That's why Gladstar founded United Plant Savers, whose members work to protect native medicinal plants for future generations. And this place, Bluebird Botanical Plant Sanctuary, is one of 98 United Plant Savers preserves across the country and the only one in Arkansas.
Basically, what a plant sanctuary is all about is it is about educating people. It is also on medicinal herbs. It is also the reestablishing of at-risk herbs.
At the top of the list, ginseng, bloodroot, black cohosh, echinacea, slippery elm, osier root, and even peyote. Now, the lemon balm we're sipping in our tea is not endangered. It was grown in Bree's garden and is attributed to not only being a nerve tonic, but an antiviral remedy. We're drinking the lemon balm fresh, but Bree also dries lots of herbs, and she prepares all sorts of infusions, tinctures, and glycerin decoctions. Bree's favorite salve is made from plantain, chickweed, and comfrey.
Because I make my own medicine, and I've been concerned about pesticides, I really wanted to somehow make this place a recognition of the plants that are here, you know, that it is a sanctuary, that plants have rights too.
But like farmers and gardeners around the globe, the Thompsons are coping with extreme weather due to climate change. Their perennial calendula, used in healing emollients, died out last year due to drought. But her violets are fine, good for wounds and digestion, and so is the mugwort, a tonic. Her cats enjoy fresh catnip, and the couple raise culinary sage, fragrant lavender, and yellow dock, a blood purifier. Bree Thompson is also cultivating a following and often fields requests for advice, as well as for plant remedies she prepares. And for Bree's husband, Scott, he experiences Bluebird Botanical Sanctuary as part of a sacred indigenous continuum.
Well, how it feels is it feels like you're connected back through time. You know, in the old days, there was a sacred connection. We didn't see herbs as just things inanimate things to pick. They were part of your family. And when you see them as sacred parts of your world, There's a mutual respect and a love and a connection.
Bluebird Botanical Sanctuary, kept by Bree and Scott Thompson, is featured in the spring edition of United Plant Savers Journal of Medicinal Plant Conservation. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
If you'd like to learn more, you can go to unitedplantsaver.org.
The Drennan Scott House and Historic Site is the location of the century-and-a-half-old home of Van Buren founder John Drennan. After a lengthy renovation by the University of Arkansas Fort Smith, it opened to the public in May of 2011. It's also the location of a newly formed Crawford County Chronicles speaker series that showcases the lesser-known stories of Crawford County and Van Buren. The second event is this Sunday, June 2nd at 2 o'clock. The speaker is Warren Blaylock. He's 92 and an on-and-off lifetime resident of the area. Blaylock is a businessman, teacher, veteran, livestock farmer, and has an interest in people.
Background of people and where they came from and what they do and this sort of thing. And of course, this Bonnie and Clyde stirred up my interest with all the things that they were doing.
His talk on Sunday will be on the infamous Bonnie and Clyde. In 1933, when Blaylock was 12 years old, the duo spent 2 weeks in Fort Smith while Bonnie recovered from burns she endured from a car crash in Texas. Though he was young at the time, he paid close attention to what his elders were talking about. The early 30s were a gray time for many, but the stories of Bonnie and Clyde brought some color to their lives. Blaylock was so intrigued by the couple that he spent years researching them. He didn't want to give too much away for the people that will be attending his talk on Sunday, but I'll go ahead and let him tell you how the duo met.
She was a barmaid, and he was in prison. So when he got out of prison, one of his buddies there said, "Go by and see my girlfriend." He said, "I'm in for 200 years," and said, "Why don't you just go by and see her?" When he did, they just hit it off exactly right. And in just a few days, she stopped her barmaid and went with Clyde on wherever he was doing at that particular time, whether it was robbing grocery stores or robbing banks or whatever it happened to be. There was a word that he just didn't care for. W-O-R-K.
He's passionate about his stories. And at 92, Blaylock doesn't look a day over 75 and as sharp as a tack. In a large cowboy hat and boots, he manages around the historic house just fine on his own. He says he's participating in the Chronicles series to draw attention to this house and to the stories of the area.
To increase the visibility of this facility here. And with this Bonnie and Clyde, that's going to have more people up here that might not be up here at all to see this. And then if we have somebody else later on, they'll get more people knowing what's here in Van Buren. I didn't know it was up here, and I was just right down under the hill there until the last 10 years, and with some of the former owners that I knew, one of the sons. I like to tell things that just like it happened. You can hear so many things now.
Blaylock will be speaking on many other topics in the future. And his secret to a long, healthy life? Staying positive. We'll have a longer story with Blaylock on Bonnie and Clyde's time in Arkansas here on Ozarks at Large in the coming weeks. For more information on the Crawford County Chronicle speaker series at the Drennan Scott House, call 479-262-2750.
The story of Bonnie and Clyde is a story the old folks knew. The story of Bonnie and Clyde, if you listen, I'll tell it to you. Clyde Barrow wouldn't work, so he chopped off his toe in a Huntsville prison where he got his parole. Then he traveled to Dallas where he found him a friend. It was Miss Bonnie Parker, and that's where it all began.
The Fayetteville Underground will feature Women Take Flight during the month of June. This national juried art exhibition is in recognition of the 2013 Air Race Classic, which ends in Fayetteville June 21st. The opening reception begins at 5 p.m. during First Thursday. More information available at FayettevilleUnderground.com. And support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle.
Beethoven and Mozart, icons of classical music, performed by the best ensembles of today. Hi, I'm Katie Henriksen, host of Note, which airs Monday through Friday from 11 to noon on KUAF. Join me Friday for Mozart's Serenata Notura from Gidon Kremer and Kremerata Baltica, as well as Beethoven's Symphony No. 4 in B-flat major, Opus 60, performed by Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, led by Joshua Bell. That's coming up Friday from 11 to noon in Of Note, right here on KUAF Public Radio.
There are 2 days left in May. That makes this Thursday, May 30th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
It also makes it about time for the whining to begin.
Like, I'm bored?
Like, that Mom, sort of thing? I'm bored. Let me help you out.
Okay.
Apparently summer offerings have grown because we've always done classes part one and classes part two. Well, this year we did classes part three. And I'm not going to sit here and rattle them off for you, but I'm going to tell you some of the places.
Well, it would be impossible to do so.
Oh, unless we took two segments.
Right.
But here are some places that you should look for things for your kids to do. The Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale is doing a summer art camp. I believe it lasts for several weeks.
5 weeks.
And they are doing all sorts of fun things for kids with all sorts of fun teachers. Mm-hmm. And it's not expensive.
No, less for members than non-members, but still not bad.
Although in their new season, they are offering a season ticket package for non-members for the first time ever.
Oh, good for them.
So that's something to know. The Community Creative Center in Fayetteville.
At Nadine Baum Studios.
Offering all kinds of classes.
And the best thing about both of those, as well as others, almost every medium you can think of, from clay to charcoal to, I mean, it's...
To drama to
right, it's
everything. Arts Live Theater, obviously offering summer classes with, again, a whole raft of really cool and interesting instructors. And their programs run from age 6 to age 18.
Yeah.
So you got to find something there you'll like. I believe Trike Theater in Bentonville has something going on. Shiloh Museum has something going on.
Your local libraries
have lots of things going on.
University of Arkansas Fort Smith Academy of the Arts.
Western Arkansas Ballet.
Yeah.
So if you will check what's up for the last 3 weeks, you can find it online. There are all sorts of class offerings. And if that doesn't work, shoot me an email at bmartin@nwaonline.com and I will fix you right up.
Better than what my summer plan used to be when I was a kid.
Boredom.
No, Green Acres reruns ad nauseum.
Oh, mine was boredom and occasionally going to the public pool so that I could sunburn and not tan.
Okay. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
There are several options in Northwest Arkansas for entertainment, from concerts to art shows to live theater. Recently, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda surveyed the drama landscape to see how it has evolved, and she has this report.
Like many things in Northwest Arkansas, theater in the region has changed dramatically during the last 20 years. There is more of it, and the shows that local companies produce range from classic musicals to fresh off Broadway productions. What hasn't changed is the need for weeks of rehearsal prior to opening night. Recently, a group of actors gathered inside Northwest Arkansas Community College's White Auditorium for a night of rehearsal.
I must say, I don't blame Phelps Potter for playing around.
Oh, does her husband?
Oh, Phelps has made passes at all us girls. I do think it's bad taste for a man to try and make his wife's friends, especially when he's bald and fat. I told him once, Phelps Potter, I said, the next time you grab at me, I'll go straight to Edith.
And did you?
Certainly not.
A little over a week ago, the curtain fell for the final time for the Village Players. After 31 seasons, the Benton County-based Community Theater Group closed its doors. Kathy Forbes directed The Women, the organization's final production.
There's so many people that have got so many ideas, and they keep trying to shove them all into this kind of old format that they've followed for many years. This is going to give a lot of people, there's a lot of creative people that have been doing theater with Village Players for many years, and I'm excited to see what they're going to do now. There's little seedlings of things that are going to happen from this. Village Players will never be gone completely because the people will just, they'll create new things, and there's such a sense of community that really was based in Bella Vista, and I have a feeling we'll see something that'll spring up there that'll kind of go back to their roots and the way they used to do things, and you know, really tried to jump in with the big boys down here but without your own space down in Bentonville. So, and you know, I'm really hoping that we get to see a community theater in Bentonville at some point. Nothing against RLT, I love them, but it would be nice to see a little black box theater somewhere, and I hear rumblings and of maybe something happening that way, and really hoping it does.
Jan Reed Miller, former board president and a cast member of The Women, says not having a permanent home for the group made it difficult for them to get their name out in the community. The actress says she believes it wasn't one thing, but rather a combination of things that led to the group disbanding. She says for whatever reason, it dwindled down to there just wasn't enough support for them to keep going.
It seems like when we started, it was the Bella Vista Village Players. And so we were at Reardon Hall, and it was kind of a community-based. But then it got to the point where we couldn't afford Reardon Hall anymore. So we found another home here, which required a retirement community in Bella Vista to come here. And then that retirement community has kind of dwindled. And we've done a lot of work on trying to incorporate Bentonville and get Bentonville involved. You know, the audiences just kept dwindling. People kept dwindling who would try out. There were a lot of new things, Theater Square, the Walden Arts Center, Rogers Little Theater, you know, Springdale. So it just seemed like we tried our best to figure out a way, tried everything we knew how to get more interest, and it just didn't happen.
Another long-standing theater staple in Benton County is Rogers Little Theater. Kay Cotton co-founded the nonprofit organization 27 years ago.
At that time, really, if you wanted to participate in theater, whether it was painting a set or acting or directing, you had to either drive to the ACO in Springdale or go to Joplin or Tulsa. And of course, there was theater at the university too, but it was mostly university students. So there just wasn't really much opportunity. And the audiences, of course, didn't have many options. And now, for goodness sakes, there's theater all over the place.
The creation of professional entities like Theater Squared and Ceramic Cow Productions have helped create more theater opportunities in the region. In addition to the growth of theater, the subject matter on stage has changed as well. Cotton says Rogers Little Theater is a lot better off technically than it used to be. She recalls a time when the group painted tin coffee cans black, inserted light bulbs into them, and then strung them up between trees for lighting during an early production. Cotton says some other changes at RLT include making an effort to really involve kids, as well as producing plays they wouldn't have had the nerve to do 20 years ago. She says in recent years, some of RLT's productions have been quite mature in theme.
Back then, we tried to select shows that we knew would be big crowd pleasers because we needed to draw audiences. And so we selected shows like Neil Simon plays and musicals, which are always popular, comedies, or if we did a drama, it would be something like 12 Angry Men or The Glass Menagerie, something that had name recognition, and we knew we could get folks to come. Now, we're beginning to do shows that nobody's ever heard of. I doubt that many people in the area who aren't real theater fans would know Love, Loss, and What I Wore. They'd say, huh? What's that? It's a wonderful play. And so, you know, we're just being more ambitious in the programming. Plus, we do a lot more shows now than we did. We started out doing 5.
Art Center of the Ozarks and Sager Creek Art Center are two organizations that are adapting to the changing theater landscape. The ACO in Springdale has been working on a $1 million revitalization project to improve the organization's home by fixing heating and cooling units and refurbishing the exterior facade and parking. Jan Lauderdale, board president at Sager Creek Art Center, says they've been trying to re-energize the board of the Siloam Springs-based art center. Lauderdale says they've infused the board with new people and they're focused on rebuilding, so the community will be as excited about what they're doing as they are.
In any organization that's run on a volunteer basis, a lot of times it comes down to there's a small group of people that are doing everything. And I'm living in fear that those people that have been doing everything are going to be burned out and not want to do it anymore, and then it will die. And so because of that, we realized we've got to infuse it with new life. We've got to bring more people in here that are willing to help keep it alive. And so that's really what caused us to sit back and say, okay, it's time. We've got to figure out how we're going to make this happen if it's going to stay alive, because otherwise it's not. And, you know, the Village Players are very good friends of ours, and we've actually collaborated with them before on productions, and it just broke my heart when, you know, when they had to close.
As community theater groups often do, Sager Creek struggles with being an organization run solely by volunteers. Stephen Spinotto, who has been involved with the group since he was a child, is now a board member, and his focus has been helping the organization with publicity.
We actually have no one to run the Arts Center, so really the board members have to act as, you know, almost day-to-day, which we can't really do, trying to manage as much as we can. So then what you are left with is, you know, whenever you find someone who's willing to direct a show, that director becomes everything. That director becomes publicist. That director becomes, you know, not just artistic director, but, I mean, everything that they're having to put together. And that's really putting a strain on, well, publicity. Kind of took the shot, which is unfortunate because, you know, how are you going to get people to come see your show if they don't hear about it?
Spinotto says now that they've built the board back up, they're looking at how to build back a foundation of membership and donors and corporate sponsorships. These things are necessary because most theater companies can't survive on ticket sales alone. Jan Lauderdale, board president at Sager Creek Arts Center, says the group's number one priority is to be able to hire someone again because that person could help apply for grants. When asked what theater in Northwest Arkansas will look like in the next 20 years, Kay Cotton, co-founder of Rogers Little Theater, agrees that having a paid employee is something that will need to happen.
I think we are fast approaching the time when we're going to, and I can only speak for Rogers Little Theater, but we're going to have to hire some full-time staff people. We need a technical director. We need somebody to build and paint the scenes. We may even wind up with an artistic director who actually will direct most of the shows, like Harry Blundell at ACO directs most of the shows, and then every now and then he'll pull in somebody to, you know, who's a volunteer, you know, not a professional, but he will have them direct a show. But for the most part, the artistic director has huge role in selecting the shows and then in directing them. And I think we're going to get to that point. I think we'll have to.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Yvette Ortiz, a University of Arkansas graduate student and a native Spanish speaker, has been awarded a substantial scholarship to study Yiddish in New York this summer. That's right, Yiddish. It's actually her fourth language to learn, behind Spanish, English, and German. I spoke with her and one of her German professors, Dr. Jennifer Hoyer, who began speaking German at age 12 and Yiddish as a graduate student herself. Yvette says Yiddish just sort of fell into her lap.
I love German, and I was studying a lot of Holocaust topic-related subjects. So Dr. Hoyer recommended that I look at this program, which is the Ural Weinreich Yiddish summer program. And I looked into it, and I thought it was a great idea to expose myself to the other side, cultural and language. And I enjoyed it tremendously. So I just ran with it ever since then. So it's been a year now that I've been working on Yiddish.
I mean, what is Yiddish? Who speaks Yiddish?
Yiddish is literally the Jewish language. Yiddish translates to Jewish. So it is commonly spoken amongst a large number of Jewish families, but it's expanding now. There's a bigger interest than just the Jewish culture. Other people are starting to take it on, not only as a language, but as a major. You can actually major in Yiddish in the northern states now, so that, to me, is amazing that it's grown that way. But it originated in Europe, Eastern Europe, and it's a mixture of Old High German and the Hebrew alphabet. So spoken, it sounds very much like German, but written, it is completely the Hebrew alphabet.
So, Dr. Hoyer, are there Yiddish classes offered here at the University of Arkansas?
No, there are not, unfortunately. But they, what that does for us, gives us an opportunity to give students who want to do that the chance to apply for this outside program, which brings with it its own set of accolades, right? Because it's nice to have Arkansas represented at this summer institute in New York City, and they get fairly decent chance and a fairly decent amount of scholarship money attended to it, right?
Yes.
How have you used it since your study last summer?
Since studying last summer, I've actually used it quite a bit. This year when we hosted the Beyond the Holocaust series, I actually did two Yiddish lessons to begin the two films that we screened in Yiddish. So that was really good. Everyone that came really enjoyed it. It was a fun time for me. I was able to actually show what I learned and put it into practice. So that was good. And then I've also done some research with Yiddish poets and done a paper related to that. So I was able to integrate it in the academic world, but also with the community. So it was extremely satisfying.
So you mentioned Yiddish classes, just kind of a little tutorial before a film. People like me that have never heard?
Oh, yeah, completely. There was people that had some Yiddish background, maybe some their grandmothers or grandparents in some way spoke it when they were children. So they didn't really know the background or the basics, but they understood it. And then there was students from our own German classes that came and enjoyed the movies and just learned from ground zero. They had nothing, no background at all in Yiddish. And by the end, they were singing songs, and it was good. It was
so
a lot of fun.
How would you begin a Yiddish lesson?
A Yiddish lesson. I focused on key pronunciation letters. So I focused on the vowels, and then the rest of it, we just kind of worked through it, because we can't teach an entire alphabet in 20 minutes, but we can work on sound and pronunciation, and we were able to complete an entire song.
Okay. Can you give an example?
Yidelmitten Fiete. Let's see, Dr. Hoyer, help me with the next line.
Aria mit dem Bass.
So, das Leben is a Jiddel. Yidelmitten Fiete is the one that we screened the first time around, and that is part of the song itself. So by the end, everyone was able to sing the chorus line to that.
That was super fun. I mean, I think everybody, even people who were slightly shy, which is super exciting. Not only because it's not something that you get much of a chance to learn here, although there are actually people who live in Fayetteville who speak
right.
Yiddish, or who grew up listening to their parents or grandparents speak Yiddish, usually as the language that they were not supposed to understand.
The secret language.
Right.
But also, it's something that people don't necessarily have a lot of access to here. It's nice to have a student of the language make the language accessible to new people. It's like after the last one where Rabbi Jacob got up to comment on the film a little bit and then spoke at you in Yiddish and said, you know, that was a really nice lesson. And
yes, well, and there was a young boy also that was there, and he was just piped up right away remembering what we had gone over the first time because he was at the first film screening.
Well, you mentioned this Beyond the Holocaust series, and it's part of a Jewish studies program that
We're trying to build here, a Jewish studies program that we're trying to build. And the grant specifically is called the Legacy Heritage Fund Jewish Studies Project Grant. It's a pretty unique grant. It was only offered for a 3-year span, and only 3 or 4 schools got it for those years. So in total, I think 13 institutions in the country. And the Legacy Heritage Foundation funds it in co-organization with the Association for Jewish Studies, which is an academic organization, professional membership organization for anyone who does Jewish studies. And what that is it's totally interdisciplinary. So people who study ancient practice, biblical, different linguistic thing. I mean, it covers such a broad
spectrum. All-encompassing.
Yeah. And we have a number of faculty members on the campus right now who were already teaching classes that have some representation in Jewish studies, but we didn't have a program. And this grant is specifically aimed at universities that are outside of major metropolitan areas that are trying to build or are already in the process of building and need to expand their Jewish studies program. And so Arkansas was a natural fit.
And just because I know that I've spoken with, you mentioned Rabbi Jacob, and I've spoken with him for, you know, a couple of stories. And, you know, the Jewish population in Northwest Arkansas is not really very large.
No.
Right.
Right.
And so
all
I mean,
the more reason to have a Jewish
studies
program.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And I mean, students are incredibly interested in it for a lot of different reasons, mm-hmm. which we see just based on the kind of enrollment that we have in the classes that we already have been offering. There's just so much out there that we can offer and that students have access to.
What sorts of programs do you have lined up for the fall?
What we're hoping to do next year, since the grant unfortunately only covers the 1 year.
Okay.
Now it comes down to keeping the grassroots organization going, is to keep some of our faculty and students out in the open so that people can see what everyone is working on. Because these are not only classes that we teach, it also in some cases represents our own research interests. So for example, hopefully what will happen next year is that we'll have a couple of faculty members give kind of colloquium or talks that may or may not have some reading associated with it, but so that we get to see what faculty members on this campus are working on. And then we will probably try to get more world languages involved as well, because Yiddish is an important language also in connection with other languages in other parts of the world. So,
well, Yvette, you did this program once last summer,
mm-hmm.
and you're doing it again this summer. What do you hope to bring back this time?
This time around, I'm hoping that I'll be able to spend more time on reading texts so that I'm wanting to begin a reading group for the spring. So my focus will be to get texts that we can work with, that I can use to work with people that have never had Yiddish, something that we can use that's basic and fun. So that's what I want to bring back to be able to expose everyone to. And then I will also be doing research for myself that I'm interested in with female Yiddish poets, particularly Razel Sklinski, who's Polish. So
you mentioned that Yiddish has pieces of High German in it.
Mm-hmm.
How are the, as I am more familiar with German, how are the two similar?
They're actually quite similar. There's a lot of words that are almost identical.
I noticed that when you were saying Leben.
Pronunciation is slightly different, but fundamentally, it's when you're listening, it sounds very much the same. Ich heiße Yvette. My name is Yvette. It's almost exactly like German. Ich heiße Yvette. You just have a slight little differentiation.
Can I append something to that?
Sure.
And you will, I think, attest to this as well. To learn to speak Yiddish as somebody who speaks German already, difficult, problematic, challenging, interesting?
I found it problematic in some ways, because if you pronounce a word, a Yiddish word, with a German take on it, sometimes it gets a little interesting because it's not Yiddish and people will quickly call you out on that. But it was easier to grab the language, to actually take it and run with it, because there was some overlap there. So it was interesting to see how people reacted to using German words intermingled with Yiddish words. Because the beginning, it is very much the same, but the further you get into the language, the more differences there are between the words. So,
and then in addition to that, I think there's even another level, because I know most languages are like this, but I feel like Yiddish, every word you say has so many meanings to
it. Yes, it
does. There's almost nothing you say that only means the thing that you just said. It's two or three other things as well. And so much of it is inflection. So much of it is how you're looking at the person. It's one of these languages that you have to immerse yourself. I mean, you have to immerse yourself in any language. But in Yiddish, it's a language you speak with your whole body. It's incredible. I want to do this immersion program myself and next summer if I can, or thereafter, because reading is good and fun, but I feel like you really understand what you're looking at a lot better if you can really speak it and experience it.
Dr. Jennifer Hoyer is a professor of German at the University of Arkansas. Dr. Hoyer will be spending her summer in an archive in Germany, researching the concepts of time and space in poetry in the 17th century.
Her student, Yvette Ortiz, received a scholarship to study Yiddish in New York this summer. She hopes to get a fellowship to go to Poland for a year, where there is still quite a large population of Yiddish speakers. She says she'll have to learn her fifth language, Polish, if she does go there. Yvette wanted to point out that to immerse yourself in something like Yiddish doesn't mean you have to spend a summer studying it. It could just mean being open to new things and running with it.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
We're pleased to have Jody Beznoska, Vice President of Communications for Walton Arts Center, with us. How are you?
Hello, I'm good. How are you guys?
Pretty good.
Tomorrow, our single tickets for Jersey Boys, which is the first show on next year's Broadway season, go on sale. So you're going to want to get those early. This is Jersey Boys has never played in this market. It's probably one of our most requested shows. And I will imagine that the tickets are going to be gone by the time you get to September. So now's a really good time to buy because you can get the best seats. We also have a couple of great packages available that will help you save some money if you want to. And then our next big event at Walton Arts Center is the Art of Wine Festival, which is our biggest fundraiser of the year. It's a three-day festival. It's the 13th, 14th, and 15th of June. And it's a massive event where we basically transform Walton Arts Center into a big, big wine tasting. Three different events. We have a dinner on the 13th, and we have two wine tastings on the 14th and the 15th. This is, the wine event, I think sometimes if you're not really into wine, you might find these events intimidating because there's so much wine and you don't really know where to start. The good news is that that's actually perfect because there's so much choice and you can taste whatever you want. You don't have to know anything about wine. You can come in knowing nothing. There'll be vintners there to talk to you, or you can come in as an expert and you can pick and choose what you want. Mm-hmm. So it's a really nice thing. And you get great food from all of our local restaurants here in Northwest Arkansas. They really help us with this event, and you can taste all kinds of yumminess from them.
You mentioned it's the largest fundraiser. This is to help with the education, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, as a nonprofit, there's a lot of programs we do at the WAC that they don't make us any money. In fact, many of our programs don't make us any money.
Like when school buses come.
Yeah. School buses, even the 10 by 10 art series, that's a subsidized program. Mm-hmm. And even a lot of our normal programming, because of the size of our hall and the low level of our ticket prices, we don't make lots of money on that. So we have to fundraise significantly, almost half of our budget, to make that up. And Art of Wine is a really important way that we do that. It comes at the end of the year, so as our budget is winding down, it becomes really important that we have lots of people come to that event because it sets the stage for next year's programs and allows us to keep trying to work to get the kids here and try to get the arts to as many people who don't have the money to afford it as possible. So that's the 13th, 14th, and 15th of June. And then we'll dive right into the classical music portion of Artisphere, which I know there's going to be lots of conversation about. But it starts on the 16th with the Chamber Music Series. We'll be at St. Paul's and Thorn Crown Chapel on the 16th and the 17th. And then we will be up at Cooper Chapel on the 19th. Oh, my gosh. And then we'll be on Dixon Street for a pub crawl with the musicians on the 20th. And then we'll be at Crystal Bridges on the 22nd. We'll have a concert in between. It's craziness. It's good stuff. And I did want to put on everybody's radar on the 20th of June at 7:30, we will be having a documentary film night at Walton Arts Center, the one piece in June that doesn't relate to classical music. And this will feature Sarah Ginsburg's film. Sarah Ginsburg is a filmmaker, and she was here filming during the first part of Artisphere. And she has a documentary film that she created herself outside of Artisphere. It's called 10,000 Trees. And so we'll show that film. We'll also show a film about sunboxes, which is another of our Artisphere projects that you may have seen and heard throughout the region. And we will also show a film about the Stickworks project, about Patrick Doherty's
which are
projects
from last year's Artisphere, still up in front of Walton Arts Center. Sunboxes Sunday at Botanical Gardens.
Right, it's part of the
yoga event.
The yoga, yes, the yoga event. So we'll be doing yoga to sunboxes, mm-hmm. and I think everybody's welcome. Mm-hmm. So,
this show has never been more public radio than just then when you said you're doing yoga to sunboxes.
Yes.
Yes. It's okay. That's okay.
Awesome. So the 20th is a free film screening night, so that will be a terrific evening. And so it's at Star Theater. Obviously, you don't have to pay. You can just come and see some great film. Yeah.
But it would behoove you to arrive early if it's Star Theater. Star Theater for a film, 250 people?
Yeah, at most probably 200 people.
At most 200. Yeah. So if you're interested in seeing this,
yeah.
Yeah,
come a little bit early. Okay. Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot going on that night, but I would recommend getting there early. Show's at 7:30.
Artistfearfestival.org has the list of what's...
of what's there and what's coming, for sure. And then there's a... Artist Fear still has some visual arts going on right now. You can still see Spiral Wetland out at Lake Fayetteville.
Right.
We're watching the plants grow on that one, and hopefully that one is going to change a lot over the summer. And we still have our exhibition open in the Joy Pratt Markham Gallery. It's called Untamed. It runs through the 28th of June, so lots of time to see that, and that's free and open to the public. Yeah, and so then that gets us through Artisphere. The last show of the Walton Arts Center season is June 29th, and it is Spank, the parody of the 50 Shades of Grey book. And tickets are on sale for that right now. That's one show only, so only one shot to see that if you want to gather your girlfriends and come out for an evening. And I think that's everything.
Okay. The Amp?
Oh, yeah. And the Amp, we have, let's see, the Old Crow Medicine Show will be at the Amp at the end of June.
Rescheduled.
Old Crow. The Summerland Tour will be on July 24th. And then I believe we just announced ZZ Top.
Yes, you did.
And the tickets for that actually go on sale this morning.
Oh.
Or they went on sale this morning. That is October 4th. So that's a ways off.
Thank you, Jody.
Thank you.
Jody Beznoska is Vice President of Communications at Walton Arts Center.
On this week's Generic Blues Show, I brought in Charles Ragsdale. He talks about the 2013 Eureka Springs Blues Weekend. That happens June 13th through the 16th. J.P. Soares, Cedric Burnside Project, Chicago Blues Review, E.G. Kite, The Nighthawks, and more. That's this Friday night at 9 o'clock on the Generic Blues Show. We'll see you then.
AETN, Fayetteville Public Library, and KUAF invite the public to a free screening of Love, Free, or Die as part of Community Cinema, Monday, June 17th from 6 until 8 p.m. at the Fayetteville Public Library. This film chronicles the struggle of openly gay Bishop Eugene Robinson to dispel the notion that God's love has limits. Following the film, KUAF's Katie Hendrickson will moderate a panel discussion about the topic. AETN.org/community cinema. For more information. Support for KUAF comes from Jim Benz, an International Society of Arboriculture certified arborist. Jim Benz evaluates and manages trees for tree health and human safety. More information is available at 442-8532 or earthworksfayetteville.com.
And this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Bentonville, Fort Smith, and Crosses.
Crosses in Madison County?
I think
Does
so, yeah.
Get into Madison?
I think it's on the, I mean, it's on the other side of Elkins.
Right.
Out Highway 16.
I should know.
Right.
Right.
Well, I just know that a lot of people, at least from Fayetteville, that are on their way to Wakarusa right now, mm-hmm. will probably be driving through Crosses.
They probably will. Can I sound paternal for just a minute?
Okay.
If you're going to Wakarusa, might not be a bad idea to have a weather alert radio with you. There are battery-operated ones or know someone who has one. Just saying.
I just said that our colleague Antoinette is going, and I just said, you know, I'm kind of glad that maybe I'm not camping in that weather.
Yeah, it's one thing to have rain, but there's a potential for severe weather, so be alert. Mm-hmm. And in all senses of the word there. By the way, the University of Arkansas Razorback men's golf team at the national championships after yesterday's second round of stroke play, they are now in a tie for fifth, which means if they can maintain that, you know, the top eight will then move on to the match play that will start tomorrow. So just to keep you up to date, they're doing very well in Georgia. So, yes, Wakarusa is this weekend. We'll have a report on it tomorrow morning from Antoinette. She's going down to cover it, and hopefully all will be good. And she'll be back with some of the first day festivities, the sounds, and conversations there. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
You and I back together Sunday morning for Weekend Ozarks at Large. That's every Sunday morning at 9.